Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now, with this edition of News in Focus, is your host, Chris Long.
Who hath believed our report, and to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant, and as a root out of a dry ground. He hath no form nor comeliness, and when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. Chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. This is Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. You're listening to News in Focus, and that is from Isaiah chapter 53, as we observe Holy Week in the Christian Church. And we hope that this is an important and meaningful spiritual time for you and your family. Well, at this time, we're going to listen to a recent interview with our State Attorney General, Dave Yost, who's talking about a very important issue on the rule of law here in the state of Ohio, and that is Ohio's capital punishment. We'll also be hearing from a young conservative who is organizing youth, not only here in Northeast Ohio, but in other states. So stay tuned to these two interviews, and thank you for tuning in to News in Focus. Well, we're going to talk about a very important issue. In fact, we have it in our voter guide. In fact, we asked the candidates, capital punishment for certain crimes such as first-degree murder, support or oppose or undecided. I have to tell you, the candidates that filled out the survey, both Republican and Democrat, resoundingly support the death penalty. The question is, how do we proceed with the death penalty in this state since the time of the DeWine administration? It's all but been suspended. Governor DeWine has put question marks in his administration over the method of carrying out capital punishment in this state for those who have committed the most heinous crimes and have been convicted in a court of law and are waiting on death row. In fact, if you go over the last four administrations, going back to Governor Taft, Governor Strickland, Governor Kasich, and the current administration, the most executions that took place were during the Democrat Strickland administration. So I think only one or two has actually been carried out during DeWine's 6 years. He's now in his sixth year. So there is legislators that are moving forward, because this is not just an Ohio problem, but other places around the country, those who oppose the death penalty have filed lawsuits and complaints and have put injunctions on the procedures of states to carry out the death penalty. But in Alabama, they're leading the way. And our guest on the phone joined in a press conference just in the last 10 days with legislators in the Ohio House who have come up with a very workable plan going forward so that if we're going to have a death penalty, we need to actually carry it out. And with me on the phone is our State Attorney General, Dave Yost. Mr. Attorney General, glad to have you on the program today.
Well, it's good to be with you, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on, and thank you for your position on this issue. And you're on the record. If we're going to have a death penalty, then we need to actually follow through with the justice of law. Tell me what your thoughts are about what Alabama has done and how that could actually help us here in Ohio.
So there's a lot of misinformation around this, which isn't surprising, and anything in the right-left divide. But Alabama became the first state in the union to use this technique, and it's basically using nitrogen, which is not a poisonous gas. It's in the air that you're breathing right now. In fact, there's more nitrogen in the air than there is oxygen. What the nitrogen does is it replaces the oxygen, and you will lose consciousness and eventually pass because of that. Now, there's been some discussion about how this fella in Alabama was writhing and gasping on the table, on the gurney, as the procedure was carried out. But he was a killer. He had told everybody he didn't want to die at all. He didn't want to die by nitrogen inhalation. And so he was strapped down. He didn't go willingly, which isn't surprising. And he wrestled against his restraints. But here's the much better evidence, because you know, the people on the left were saying, "Oh, he was in pain and agony, and look at him writhing around and gasping." And you know, the physician wasn't having any of that. That was observing it. But here's the most important thing to know. In Europe, we're talking about oh-so-civilized Europe, woke, progressive Europe. They use this for assisted suicide. The attendant will administer, you go into a room, an airtight room, and they will flood it with nitrogen, and you'll go to sleep. Now, either this is a horrible, you know, asphyxiation, which is how the left is trying to portray it, and Europe is using this voluntarily for people who are voluntarily committing suicide, or in fact, it actually is as advertised, and it's an effective and essentially painless way to go.
That's right. We're talking about nitrogen hypoxia is an alternative method for carrying out capital punishment that has been available by legislatures in other states, said State Representative Brian Stewart, who was with you in the press conference. In federal court proceedings, even defense counsels have conceded that an offender executed by nitrogen hypoxia would be quickly, painlessly, and humanely rendered unconscious, followed rapidly by death. There can't be really any objection to this new method. That's been the question here with those who oppose what has been happening as far as the different forms of execution. But we're really talking about carrying out the justice. These are people that have taken innocent life in the most heinous type ways. They've gone through the justice system, and without any doubt, they have been convicted, and the death penalty has been sentenced, and then they sit on death row for appeal after appeal, and we're talking years, in some cases decades. The Ohio public is very frustrated with this when justice is denied, and when it's delayed, it is denied. And there are victims, survivors who are waiting for justice. And I'm going to say from this, from the standpoint of the Ohio Christian Alliance, we stand resolute in support of the death penalty. In fact, from Leviticus 24:17, and I'm reading through the Old Testament right now, and I'm going to have a New Testament verse as well, but let me read the Old Testament. Leviticus 24:17, "And he that killeth any man shall surely be put to death." The Bible is very clear on this, on capital punishment. In Romans chapter 13, verse 4, it reads, "For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger, to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil." And it's talking about the magistrate in this case in the book of Romans. So both Old and New Testament, people ask me, well, what's your position? That is my position. It's a biblical position. And there has to be a fear of the justice and the judgment of civil society, a Judean Christian ethic. Which is, by the way, worldwide, and that innocent life is to be protected. And when you talk to people, say, "Well, I don't believe in the death penalty." Well, they say that when they haven't actually faced the situation of a criminal act that has taken precious life from them. And so, you know, David, we, you know, again, I say the good news here is because I know there's always. Every couple of years, the liberal media in Columbus says, "Oh, there's an effort to do away with death." I'm telling you, it's overwhelming. Democrat and Republicans filling out our survey that support the death penalty. Nobody really rejoices about the death penalty. It's one of those necessary processes of judgment and justice that has to be carried out. Nobody rejoices in it. But the fact of the matter is, it has to be upheld and it has to be, carried out. And when you have this suspension under the DeWine administration, quite honestly, I'm trying to be kind here, the governor has been disingenuous in sense, because I think he personally opposes the death penalty. He doesn't want that known. And to do this by way of process is not really right for Ohioans. You're not being truthful with the general public. And so now he's not going to be able to hide, because this thing's going to be out in the front. Legislature's going to move forward. We're going to have this debate again, it looks like. And the fact of the matter is, I will be very resolute with a coalition of groups that's saying this is a way forward that I think is very positive, that we need to give law enforcement the ability to carry out their duty.
Well, I appreciate your leadership, Chris. You talk about fulfilling the promise. The families that I've sat with and talked with, including the case that I handled myself, they all expected that justice would eventually be done. They understood that there was a necessary set of appeals, that it was going to take time, but we promised as a society and as a prosecutor, I promised them as the representative of the society that we would seek justice, and if a jury agreed with our case, that one day justice would be done. We have an unkept promise to those families of the 123 people who are convicted worst of the worst on death row. And it's time that we either lived up, if I can say this in this day and age, manned up to the commitment, or we tell them that we don't have the stomach for it. And, you know, tell them why we think it's wrong and we made the wrong commitment and ask them to release us from the commitment. But we need to at least have the courage to own our convictions. This thing where we theoretically have the death penalty for the worst of the worst, but never carry it out, is the worst of all possible worlds. And I'm challenging the legislature to deal with this. They've got an abolition bill in front of them to get rid of the death penalty. They also have a bill to make it work again, technically, with the nitrogen bill. They need to do one or the other, not to allow this stalemate to go on. You know, one other thing, you mentioned something that I think is so important for people to understand, Chris. Nobody rejoices in the taking of even a guilty life. It's a sober thing. And to all the people that, you know, sneer out there and you use words like bloodthirsty, I have something to say to them. I stood in front of 12 jurors and two alternates in the Delaware County Common Pleas Court. And I explained to them, standing 10 feet away from the defendant, I explained to them what he had done and why we thought that it was a crime. And I looked into their eyes and I asked them, if you agree with me, I need you to follow your duty and impose the sentence to kill that man. And I pointed at him. That was one of the most difficult things I've ever done in my life. This isn't some TV blow it up. It's not a first person shooter video game where you get an infinite reset button. This is serious stuff. And it's not about bloodthirst. It's about something really simple. It's called justice.
Well, that's right. And I'm reading here in this article reporting, and this may have been actually your quote, capital punishment has been recognized by the state of Ohio since 1803. It is now time for the authorization of other methods for carrying out capital punishment in addition to lethal injections. Oh, this was Mr. Plummer stated. But using nitrogen hypoxia, we are giving the system an additional resource for holding accountable those who have committed heinous crimes. claims of a lack of access to lethal injections by Ohio's execution branch will no longer be the case. It is time that we stop postponing executions and give the families and victims the closure that they deserve. I agree with Mr. Plummer. I agree with Representative Stewart. I agree with you, Attorney General. It is time to move forward. So let me ask you, in what is the holdup currently with the carrying out of these executions of those on death row? What is the holdup? Is it the governor's office? Is it the administration or this bureaucratic office that oversees the carrying out of
It's the availability of the drugs. So Ohio law currently says the only thing you can do is a lethal injection. And the companies that use those drugs or manufacture those drugs manufacture other things as well. And they say, we won't sell these things to you. And beyond that, if we sell them to you and you use them for purposes that we don't approve, in other words, if you use them for capital punishment, we're not going to sell any of our drugs to you. We're going to blacklist you. Now, nobody knows for sure whether they would follow up on that threat. I think that they would be, potentially open to a lawsuit, particularly if they did that all together and made it so that the state wasn't able to obtain these things from anywhere. But I really doubt that they're going to do that. Ohio buys a lot of drugs. We spend billions on through Medicaid and through other programs, VWC and within our the DRC as well. I don't think that that's true. But I'm not going to blame Governor DeWine for not wanting to roll the dice on that. And so here's the solution. Here's a workable way to do it. And you'll face up to the question. Yes or no? Are we going to have capital punishment? If the answer is no, at least own it. Get out there and explain why. I think we should continue to have capital punishment. And I'll be joining you, Chris, in this public debate, to say that we need to. I'd love if we have a minute to explain why I think that's the case.
Well, we do. And share with us your thoughts on the death penalty and why it needs to continue.
So I'd like you to consider an individual who has committed one of these worst of the worst kinds of murders, but they do it in a state where there is no death penalty. So they have life without parole, and that's what the liberals want us to believe is the solution for everything. Just lock them up, keep them away from us forever, but don't kill them. And so a lot of people are going, well, that makes a lot of sense. And in fact, since life without parole, or LWOP as prosecutors call it, it became available, that is the majority of the aggravated murder verdicts. The number of death penalty cases has gone down, and I don't have a problem with that. Those are decisions made about the individual fact. But let's go back to our hypothetical prisoner sitting in on death row, and he decides he's got nothing to lose, and so he takes a cook or a social worker or a guard, and he cuts their throat with malice aforethought, cold blood. That prison worker has a spouse, kids, maybe grandkids, and now they're gone. What is the penalty for that guy? Are we going to give him double super secret life without parole? You've already gone as far as you're allowed to go, and yet he gets to go further. What do we do in a situation like that? Well, there's only one option. At least in that situation, you have to have capital punishment, or you're declaring open season on other people in the prison, whether they be prisoners themselves or, prison staff. And in fact, we have seen in other states that have abolished the death penalty, cases like this arrive. So logically, you're in a corner. You have to have capital punishment, at least for that guy. And once you've said, well, we're going to have some capital punishment, now we're arguing about what we're going to have capital punishment for. And I'm happy to have that debate. Maybe we need to have more. Maybe we need to have less. Personally, I think I wouldn't have a real problem with using the death penalty on sexual rape of children, you know, where there was no residual doubt that they had actually done the thing. You know, that's so heinous. But maybe we have too many things and we want to whittle it down. Great, let's have that debate. But don't tell me with a straight face that we don't need to have capital punishment, because at least for that situation where somebody is already guilty and serving life without parole, we need a further sanction.
We're talking with State Attorney General Dave Yost. We're talking about Ohio's capital punishment, the death penalty, and a new method that Alabama, the state of Alabama, just executed last month. And they've, in fact, their state attorney general said, other states, reach out to me because we have found a method that works very well, nitrogen hypoxia. And so, David, I think this is the way forward. We don't have to worry about a drug company banning us if we're going to use lethal injection. We'll have the method that we need to be able to carry out and fulfill the promises that we made to the victims, survivors of these heinous crimes in the state of Ohio. And in my opinion, uphold justice. In fact, as you and I both know, crime rates are off the charts right now in our big cities. The unpolicing of just crime gone wild has made a lot of people fearful. I get out and talk to community groups all across the state, and I ask for people a show of hands of how many have actually just been fearful of what's happening in our world today. I mean, two-thirds of the hands of the go up in the room. I've never seen anything like that. And so that's because we see crime rates skyrocketing, and we talk to law enforcement. You talk to them every day, of course, as Attorney General. That's why there has to be a deterrent. And when you don't have one, it's been suspended. We've got a real problem in the state, and I appreciate your leadership on this. And a coalition of groups will be supporting the death penalty and this new method to carry out justice in Ohio so that we can basically protect the innocent and penalize the guilty for what they've done.
Well, I appreciate that. This is ripe for the debate we're about to have. And Chris, I want to mention to you that on April 1st, every year, the state, Ohio state law requires me to publish a report, an annual report on the state of the death penalty in Ohio. So you'll want to mark your calendar on that. We will be releasing that again. Not to anyone's surprise, we will have more people staying longer time on death row.
Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Attorney General, we're just running out of time here, but I'm going to tell you, we're going to resend that report out to our membership. We'll be looking for that on April 1st. Thank you so much for being my guest today. And if people want to follow the fine work of the Attorney General's office, what's the website again?
Just Google Ohio Attorney General, and you'll see it right at the top of your results.
And thank you for all the fine work that you do, and we'll stand shoulder to shoulder with you on this issue. Thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Chris. God bless.
God bless you, my friend, and we pray for you and your service for our great state. Well, we've run out of time, but thanks for listening. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is Chris Long, host of News in Focus, announcing my new book, For Their Honor, How the D-Day Prayer Was Added to the World War II Memorial. This book tells the 11-year story of how one of the largest mass prayers in history was added to the World War II Memorial. The D-Day Prayer was one of FDR's fireside chats, but it stands alone as an incredible moment in American history. The date was June 6, 1944. Operation Overlord, the D-Day invasion of Western France, was already underway by the Allied nations. News reports throughout the day were released from General Eisenhower's headquarters with short statements but with few details on what was happening with the landings and on the beaches of France. The American public anxiously awaited throughout the day to hear from President Roosevelt for more details on the historic invasion. What they heard that evening was a president inviting them to join him in prayer. This book will inspire and encourage your faith. You can order yours today at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. From fighting wildfires with air support, helping civilians in flooded neighborhoods, to delivering food and supplies to those who have lost everything, the Army National Guard always responds when disaster strikes. The Army National Guard also trains to be ever vigilant against threats, foreign and domestic. They protect our skies with missile defense weaponry. They secure our information, communications, and infrastructure with cybersecurity. And they protect us against chemical, biological, and radiological hazards with the civilian support team. The Army National Guard also stands ready to deploy and provide support for conflicts or humanitarian missions abroad. Join the Army National Guard and be there to respond, protect, and support your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Ohio Army National Guard. Aired by the Ohio Association of Broadcasters and this station.
The following is a previously aired broadcast.
Okay, and we're back. And we're going to talk to another leader of young people, and that's Aidan Haggard with the American Conservative Youth Union. And he actually has an office of the group on the square in Medina County. We're going to talk about how that came about because he's getting some support in his effort to lead and reach young people with a conservative message. And, of course, that's so important after what we just talked about here on the program with Mark Harrington of Create Equal and how young people voted last election and how we're going to be able to turn the tide on a more conservative agenda with young people and, quite honestly, a moral agenda going forward in the years and the decade to come. Aidan, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you having me.
Well, Aidan, you're actually working the polls today, and you're taking a little time out. We're glad that you're doing it on your break to share with us on News and Focus here. So let me just ask you, what's the turnout at your precinct? Is it okay? What's the turnout of voters today?
It's a little bit lower than I would anticipated with this primary. I believe the last time we checked, we were a little over 1,500. And mind you, the precinct that I'm working at is actually a very large culmination of many precincts. So it's kind of low, but as I look, there's a lot of people that are going in here to vote. A lot of young voters, too, first-time voters. And I'm very proud to be able to play a part in that process.
Well, that's fantastic. You, of course, were at the Ohio Christian Alliance Freedom Banquet, where we had both a candidate forum at 6 p.m. and then our dinner program with Bill Fetter at 7 p.m. You filled a table with some young folks from Medina and some of the high schools there. It was great to meet them, and they seemed to have a great time and, of course, participate and listen to the candidate forum between basically the three Senate challengers, which, of course, are facing off today. Frank LaRose came in on way of video, so did Matt Dolan. But Bernie Moreno was, there in person. And then we had the 13th Congressional District, where you had Kevin Coughlin and Chris Bandwick. But it basically addressed the issues and all. What did the folks say to you after the banquet? They seemed to enjoy themselves, but what were some of their thoughts about the candidate forum?
They really enjoyed it. They also like to get a new taste of closer to what the grassroots movement is. There's two parts to the political spectrum, pretty much, you could say. And it's the Republican movement and the conservative movement. And it was nice for them to see the conservative movement. I think they enjoyed the events of the grassroots movement a lot better than the Republican movement. They thoroughly enjoyed listening to the candidates, and they were able to make their own opinions on it. Now, only some of us could vote on these individuals, myself included. But they were more informed of the voters or what they had in mind. And they had a couple critiques of them, and they were able to point them out as well.
Well, that's so important to be able to discern that at a young age to participate. That's where it all starts. It makes or breaks, quite honestly, is with the next generation participating. And so I'm so glad that you're doing this. In fact, I remember the political science teacher I had in high school, and I was quite interested in what he was talking about. And he did a great job of getting the students to participate and answer questions. And, you know, it's funny, years later, it finds out, you know, I'm more conservative, I'd probably vote Republican. I think he was a Democrat, more of a blue dog Democrat. And he became Democrat of the city of Stowe, which is where I went to school. But we were friends. We saw each other at the state house and all. And I told him how I appreciated his political science class. By the way, you couldn't tell his politics when he was teaching that class, by the way, unlike what we find in the classroom today, with a very partisan leftist radical view from some of these teachers. Not all, but some. What we hear about, of course, we hear about the worst cases. There are some great teachers out there that are teaching the Constitution and the political process for students to be involved. What's your experience with maybe political science at your high school years? What's been your experience, Aiden?
Yeah, last year when I was a junior, I took advanced placement political science, and it was actually a very enjoyable class. They thoroughly taught us the Constitution. I learned a thing or two. And the teacher was a Democrat, but you really couldn't tell that in the way that they taught. But to contrast that with how other teachers will teach a more general civics class that's required by the state, a lot more liberal-leaning with their ideologies, the way that they portray the message. I remember that one of the requirements for a class was that you had to write a speech in favor of socialism as if you were a factory worker, with no actual you couldn't create an opposition to it, you know? And
oh, that's crazy.
Exactly. And it's a lot more subtle these days, you know, pushing of a narrative. It's a lot more subtle and subtly integrated into our school system. You could never really point out exactly what it is until you actually sit down and hear it in its entirety. And so there are, like you said, gems of teachers who are wonderful at their jobs, and there are ones who are the bad apples.
Well, you know, I would have to tell you, I would object. And if I had a student there, I'd say, excuse me, Mr. Smith, I object. I don't have a problem writing this paper, but I also want to give the counter view. You know, and quite honestly, the administration would have to agree with that, because you just can't get there in a one-sided view of someone. Oh, you're going to do this, and this is all you're going to do. That's not teaching. That's called dogma. That's called indoctrination. So that's interesting, Aiden. Thanks for sharing that. But unfortunately, that's where, you know, parents and students, that's where they find themselves these days. You know, that's why a lot of people have chosen to homeschool, private school, and classical education. I just had a gentleman on with me a couple of weeks ago about the new classical education high school. It's actually starting with elementary school first. They're going to add a high school later. But, you know, not everybody can take that choice. They have to go to the high school where they live. And, you know, this is some of the things that they're faced with. But share with us how young people can still find a way forward to express or live their conservative views, even in the classroom, and engage with those teachers. Give us, kind of walk us through that a little bit. How did you, for instance, deal with that assignment that was very one-sided and biased? How did you handle that?
Yeah, as we have learned over the last 4 years of being in high school, me and my fellow associates, we've learned that there's strength through adversity. We had realized also, as Nixon would put it, there's a lot of silent majority in our schools. You know, a lot of the more vocal people are those liberals, but there's a lot less of them, but they seem to be a lot more because they're a lot more vocal, opposed to the fact that a lot of our conservative students and Republican students are a little bit more quiet on their beliefs. They keep it to themselves. The best way that I believe that you can best retaliate against this is to be informed. You know, our school, the Medina City School District, is very notorious for shutting down free speech. But when you know what you're talking about, it's a little bit more difficult for them to do that against you. But it really takes that determination to be able to take that next step to say, excuse me, teacher, I respectfully disagree with you. Excuse me, classmate, I respectfully disagree with you. A lot of people think that disagreement is confrontation in today's day of age. And unfortunately, that has become the reality. But whenever I disagree with you, that doesn't mean that I'm trying to pick fights with you. It means that I have a different understanding of a topic. And people cannot discern that, especially the modern left. They cannot discern the difference between disagreement and, you know, trying to fight someone. So I think being able to respectfully disagree, understand that when other people are trying to respectfully disagree, they're just trying to show their different perspective. And then also going on to just be informed as much as possible on both your side and the others. It is very difficult to fight against someone who is very informed of their knowledge. And so that is the biggest part of overturning these big obstacles that a lot of students face today.
Well, that's right. There was Dr. John Green from the Bliss Institute there at University of Akron. He wrote a book a few years back called Civility. And in fact, it's almost like the loss of civility, right, of what has happened in recent times in politics and in our culture. We can see that because, quite honestly, what we've always had in America, there's always been a disagreement, right, even from our founding. But it was civil to be able to do a discourse as to, in fact, our country was built on a disagreement. But it was a civil way in which we would engage. And, you know, I also tell people in public policy, they say, well, Chris, how have you been successful with some of the public policy successes that you've had over the years? I said, well, listen, you have a good idea. What you need to do is to convince your fellow countrymen that it is also a good idea to get behind it and legislators to adopt it. And when you get enough of them, you can get it over the finish line and it becomes legislation. But it takes a lot of persuasion and that civil argument to defend your position and win over others onto your position. That's why we were able to get the founding of American documents curriculum. We had to point out that it was a woeful outcome of what was happening in public schools in Ohio as far as basically young people were graduating not having any knowledge of civics and what you're talking about, political science or the Constitution. And so that's when we drafted the legislation was the Founding American Documents curriculum, which is the strengthening American government, American history with one full credit hour in the 8th to the 12th grade with an end-of-course exam. And that's what we were able to accomplish. And we got that done in 2011, but it took me 10 years to get that through the legislature, okay? And now it's been in place for 10 years. It's probably your advanced class that you took was part of that education, Aiden. So you're welcome. That was part of the Founding American Documents curriculum that we were able to get across the finish line. In fact, I'm looking in my office. I'm seeing John Kasich sign the legislation with former Peter Schramm of the Ashbrook Center and former State Senator Larry Obaugh. He was actually a freshman at the time before he became Senate President. And John Adams, you got to love that. That was our sponsor in the House, okay, was John Adams, like the famed founder, of course. But all of that said, that's how we are to reason. And I love what you're doing, Aiden, because you're raising up young people, training them to have that kind of civic and civil discussion engagement. Explain that.
Yeah, a big part of being a citizen in the United States is knowing your rights. If you do not know your rights, somebody else can easily trample on them and you'd be none the wiser. A right is only as strong as the knowledge you hold of it. And it's because of that we realize that we have to educate our youth. We've been working on growing across the United States. 4 years ago, my school told me that I was not good enough and that our group was not a good enough fit for Medina High School and its students. And 4 years later now, we have a national headquarters. We have chapters across the United States and representatives of our organization across the United States, as west as California, as south as Florida, and as north as, I believe, the Washington area. And so we realize that we have to advocate for and advance the policies of the conservative youth movement. But along with that comes strengthening the rights of our students. There is something called the Equal Access Act of 1984. The big concept behind it is that students should have the right to meet without regards to religious, political, or philosophical content of speech. And it says their right to have equal access shall not be infringed. The issue with this is equal access is so ambiguous that people do not know what equal access is, equal access to what. And so we have been working on a legislative initiative in order to strengthen what it means to have equal access, to not per se overturn the Equal Access Act, but to strengthen it and to fortify it so that the ambiguity cannot be taken against the students. But we've been growing through that initiative as well. We've been growing on having young students starting to work for political campaigns to learn both the civics and the political side of our duty to our country. And we've been growing in these fields because these youth, they're hungry for answers. They're hungry for, why is my legislator not listening to me? Why is my legislator not taking care of me? Why is my county going to Hades in a handbasket? Well, there's a simple solution right there. It's by taking part into politics. And so these students, they're not finite. There's a good amount of these students. These students and these young adults want to have answers, and they want to hold themselves accountable to it. And so they realize that they must be the one to bear that torch. They have to be the one to take that next step forward and able to help our country become a better place. And it's for that that we realize that we need to be able to work together with other conservative groups to branch them together, to create a network, to encourage the creation of these conservative groups, and to encourage the empowerment of conservative youth. They may feel like that there's not a lot of them out there, because that, once again, partakes with the silent majority. But when you realize you're in the majority, you could be a little bit more vocal. You could be a little bit more persuasive to your other individuals, and you could tell them to start speaking out on these issues. When you see something, you call a ball and a strike. And when you can do that with great confidence that people are not going to ridicule you, because the people that are listening to you could possibly agree with you, that strengthens both sides of the arguments. And so by creating and fostering a development of arguments for the conservative movement, by creating and fostering the next generation of conservative leaders and leadership, we are able to make a true change on the United States political field.
We're talking with Aidan Haggard. He is the president of American Conservative Youth Union. As you just heard, they're a national organization that's growing, started right out of Medina, Ohio. They have their national office right on the square in Medina. And let me give you the website. That's www.thecyu.com. Again, that's www.thecyu.com. Aidan, you're a senior in high school now?
That is correct.
So you're a senior. The American Conservative Youth Union is moving along. I love what you just shared. You know, it's funny. It was Sam Adams who said, it does not require a majority to prevail, but an irate, tireless minority intent in setting brush fires in people's minds. He was talking about basically that effective argument that we can win over our fellow countrymen. The scripture says in Leviticus 26 and verse 7, the promise from the Lord, and ye shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall. Well, it's basically saying in verse 8, and five of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight. So it doesn't require a majority to basically get this done, but an effective minority, and that's what you're doing in raising up these young conservative leaders. So it's really a mentoring program of what you're doing here. And so I love, you know, the young people that we saw that you brought to the Freedom Banquet. I think we were also over there when Dennis Prager spoke at the Lincoln Day, at the Medina County Lincoln Day dinner, which was an interesting speech, by the way. I really enjoyed some of the things he shared that night. My wife and I enjoyed that. Tell us a little bit about that. How did the folks respond to some of the youth respond to the Dennis Prager speech?
Yeah, a lot of the people that were there were a lot of younger adults as well, and sometimes their parents. There was a member of a school board in the Cleveland area. He's in his early 20s, and he was elected to the school board. He thoroughly enjoyed the speech. One of my associates, who will soon be replacing me, hopefully, James Lawrence, thoroughly enjoyed the speech as well. He really resonated with him. Me personally, I don't think I resonated with it as well as I did with the William Federer speech. I don't think it was as close to me on the topic. I thoroughly enjoyed the speech. And I enjoyed the content, but I kind of guess it goes back to say that I really enjoy the grassroots movement more than the Republican movement. But he had a lot of good points, especially when talking about Donald Trump. I really like the way that he put it. Would you rather have a doctor who is knowledgeable of his trade to treat you of a disease, who may not be the greatest person, or would you rather have a really nice person who's not as well at the job to uphold him? And so I really like the way that he was able to apply a lot of very difficult to grasp concepts in a very easy to understand manner. And we thoroughly enjoyed it. We thoroughly enjoyed the other events. It was the first time that I saw a gun auction at a event. It was a wonderful event. And we were very glad to be able to sit there with other officials of our county. It's always great to see people who can be our political mentors, who we can look up to for advice, and one of these days possibly even replace their office with them after they're willing to resign or have us run in their footsteps. So it's always a wonderful example to these students, because some students may not like a whole bunch of the aspects of politics, but they may like finances, and because of that, they may want to run for county commissioner, or they might like tax records or surveying and plumbing, and so they might want to run for county recorder or county auditor. And it's because of this that people can find that politics is not just White House and the Capitol building. It's also your local politics, the people that are your friends and neighbors who are willing to show you mentorship. I've personally been mentored by the Medina County Auditor, Anthony P. Caprella. He has shown me wonderful information. He has shown me a lot about politics. And then I've also been mentored by other individuals more on the grassroots movement. So there, both myself and many other members of the Young Conservative Movement are able to go to these events, and they're able to see, you know, what their future could be. You know, this could be the future of my life. This could be the way that I can make a change in this world. So they really enjoyed it. We always enjoy Dennis Prager as a political commentator, and we were very glad that we were able to host him.
So, Aiden, you're going to continue, obviously, in your position as president of the American Conservative Youth Union. You talked about your successor. So you're going to be going to college. What will be your status then as the leader of the organization, as let's say, next year?
I will be still remaining, assuming I'm able to fulfill the duties, the president and national Freedman Warden of the national organization. The high school organization will be handed over to underclassmen right now, who are currently in training, per se. After that, I will assess if they're able to, and I think they will be able to take over the national organization. It's a child of mine, and I care of it thoroughly, but I know that other people can take care of it maybe better than I can during college. So we will be laying those tracks to have the next foundation of our organization. We understand that as any organization or party or anything will have it, you know, we have struggles with who will be the next leader, whether it is through graduation, somebody moving, or death. You know, we have to plan for our next leaders. And because of that, we have a continuity plan, and we're working on that. I'll be thankfully going to the University of Ashland, and you mentioned at the Ashbrook Center, to study political science and accountancy in order to understand both the Constitution and budgeting well, so that when I go into the public eye, I'll be able to be close to those concepts we hold dear. And because of that, I'll be able to be close to home, close to the management of the organization, and we'll be able to continue our work that we've done.
Well, that's great, Aiden. And, you know, so, and congratulations on going to the Ashbrook Center at Ashland University, the political science department. My daughter is a graduate of the Ashbrook program, and my son-in-law as well. They're working in state government currently. The Ashbrook Center, of course, Peter Schramm, going back to Peter Schramm, bless his memory. He's on my wall here in my office because he's there for the bill signing of the Founding American Documents curriculum as he came in and testified in support of it. Great program. I look forward to seeing you down there with Mr. Sakinga. And, in fact, I want to be able to tour the new facility. I've not been able to do that yet. I'm trying to arrange a time for my son-in-law and I to meet there in Ashland. He's in Columbus. I'm up in Northeast Ohio. We'll meet in Ashland and get the proper tour by Dr. Jeff Sakinga. But you know what? I look forward to seeing you down there at the Ashbrook Center. Aiden, I just think that's fantastic. And I think that we're going to be talking in the future about the American Conservative Youth Union and your successor. In fact, I'd like to have you both on the program later this spring, of who your successor is going to be, kind of taking the reins and going forward. Now, I have both of you on the program and talking about the continued work, because it's something that the Ohio Christian Alliance would like to partner with you on, with young people around the state of Ohio. So God bless you, my friend. Appreciate all that you're doing.
Thank you very much. And for those who are interested in finding more information, you can dial us at 330-907-0051. Once again, that's 330-907-0051. Or you could write to our Ashland office at 19 West Main Street, Unit 4, Ashland, Ohio, 44805. Or to our Medina office at 5 Public Square, Unit 1, Medina, Ohio, 44256. I want to say thank you so much for having me today, and I appreciate the opportunity to spread the information on the conservative youth movement.
Absolutely, Aiden. God bless you, my friend, and thank you for all you're doing, and the Lord bless you in all of your endeavors.
God bless you as well. Thank you once again.
Thank you. Well, if you've listened to today's program, I want to give you an opportunity. We're going to give away one of our books, For Their Honor, the book For Their Honor that I wrote that you've heard about here on the program. If you're the third caller at 330-887-1922, we'll ship you out an autographed copy of For Their Honor. And so also you can get that book on our website and also at Barnes & Noble and Amazon as well. And we are scheduling speaking engagements to talk about the D-Day prayer, how it was added to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. And we'll also be doing book signings there as well. Well, thank you so much for listening today. If you've missed any of today's program, you can hear it in its entirety at our website at ohioca.org. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is brought to you by the Ohio Christian Alliance.